hear a jet in the background, it's because Luke is working at SB Nation's Austin offices, which are located at the end of a military runway. So, if you hear anything, that's what it is. We're just that's
yeah. If you haven't heard, essentially Austin's descended into kind of like a Mad Max with Mad Max, I should say, airplane though scenario where you know there's small jet fighter planes, you know, flying over, dropping bombs. So it's pretty much like Sarajevo here at this point in time.
I thought you were gonna say Mad Max, as in like Mad Max as crazy queso dip.
Yeah. As I said that, two individuals fitting that bill kind of walked past me in the alley behind the office and gave me kind of a little head nod, indicating I know what's up. So,
so you may be making deals off air that we might want to get in on with the locals in Austin. Queso and meth, what's up? Also joining us is Ryan, which I do refer to him. I can bleep that out if you like. Writes his run home, Jack. On the site, you're in Tampa, but being an expert on Las Vegas, I wanted to ask what your prop bet on the Dennis Erickson Mirage volcano death is going to be.
I think the bet needs to be what kind of vehicle he uses to try unsuccessfully to jump the volcano, and I'm going to go with kite that he thinks is a hang glider and is wrong.
I'm going to go ahead and riverside you. I think he's going to attempt to ride one of the lions from MGM, but it won't actually be one of the lions. He'll just think that it'll actually be a large house cat that he crushes. And then there'll be this awkward scene where he cries about killing the tiger, which was actually a lion, which was really a house cat. Let's go ahead. This will be a discussion of the Las Vegas Bowl. Involving Boise State and Arizona State. Arizona State is the interesting one in this game because Boise State is now used to Las Vegas disappointment. Remember, if they lose one game, Boise State goes to the Las Vegas Bowl. If they lose one game, they go from like a BCS shot to Las Vegas Bowl. Luke, my question for you is Arizona State has even less to play for, being a headless 6-6 team, which already has discipline problems, and then will be sent to the world's least disciplined place. Does this have potential for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they even hired the world's least disciplined coach to come and replace their current, I guess, brain trust. I say that liberally. That being said, you know, you've got a 6'19" quarterback and, you know, pretty much a humanized weapon at linebacker, and putting that in Vegas can only result in good things.
Ryan, if one player besides Vontaze Burfict were going to be convicted of a capital crime from the Arizona State roster, who would it be?
Oh, that is... I mean, I feel like it has to be Osweiler, only in some sort of ridiculous mistaken identity case, where somebody will think he's the Iron Giant or something to that effect, and he'll just crush like a car full of school children. Probably.
I really want the Brock Osweiler mugshot because there wouldn't be a camera tall enough to get him, so it would just be like him from the nose down.
You have to do it with those photo mosaics. Actually, you do it with much smaller pictures of Dennis Erickson.
Because
given that it's Vegas, I'm going to guess that they'd actually put him in one of those boxes where they can split him in half and just, like, lower the top half.
Exactly. We cut this Brock Osweiler in half. By the way, that's two podcasts in a row where we've had the lady cut in half trick mentioned. So I think there's going to be a renaissance of horrendous magic acts coming up in the public consciousness. I'm just, the trend of two tells me that Doug Henning-style magic is on the way.
Maybe that's Todd Graham's side hustle, and like the reason he keeps moving, you know, every 12 months, because he keeps basically alienating the other magicians and like the local magicians guild.
Ryan, does that seem like a plausible solution?
I actually thought he had just been unsuccessfully trying to proposition all of his neighbors for wife swapping, and you know, once the neighbors are sort of down on that, it's time to leave town.
Yeah, well, that could be a possibility, but if that were totally true, then Todd Graham would have ended up at Virginia Tech. We know this from We know this from our sources, correct, Luke?
Frank Beamer can't coach forever.
You know what, though? The opposite of that statement is Todd Graham is my coach, right? Frank Beamer can't coach forever, and Todd Graham can coach forever if we define forever as 1 year or 2 years at your school. My solution to the Todd Graham thing is by the way, that he is he's really never paid rent. He's really just a squatter. That's why he goes, and this is how long it's taken people. Like, you notice, he was in Tulsa, you know, for like 4 years. It'd probably take a while to like catch up to somebody who was a squatter in Tulsa, right? Like that show that was canceled with Minnie Driver about the hobo family that just, you know, sort of showed up in a house, right? Like, oh, hey, guys. Like, that's what Todd Graham does. He just moves into a house and, you know, has the utilities hooked up in somebody else's name, and it takes a while to catch him.
I've actually got a counter theory. I think that Todd Graham may be like a confidence man. So he goes and, like, you know, seduces some wealthy power broker woman who's maybe like a divorcee or like, you know, a widow rather. And, you know, he basically gets her to agree to give him $500,000 in cash to invest in this like crazy pyramid scheme. And then, like, right at the last second, he either kills her or flees town or both.
And I, on the other hand, think he's actually a butterfly, and he only lives for 10 months, and that's it.
he's just a coach made of butterflies. That's it. I have to migrate. There's no football teams in Mexico. There will be. Let's go ahead and actually attempt to discuss the game, because I'm pretty sure, by the way, that Arizona State loose in Las Vegas with an interim coach, very little supervision and very little to play for, is a terrible thing for this team, and that we can go ahead and call it a foregone conclusion. But I should point out that this will be Kellen Moore's final game. I wanted to go ahead and ask you, both of you, what's your favorite Kellen Moore memory? I definitely have one. Ryan, go first.
Gosh. I think it has to be the story most recently about how he was, during the Heisman ceremony, he was happily at home making a gingerbread house with his wife, I believe it was. I think that just says so much about what Boise State and the BCS system has done to that man, which is
you've reduced me to marital baking.
Yeah, and being happy about it. That's the real thing, you know.
Luke, share with us your favorite Kellen Moore memory.
Yeah, I think that that time that in 1984, when his past life, he was named Ty Detmer, he won that big bowl over 7-4 Michigan team. That was probably my favorite Kellen Moore moment.
I think my favorite Kellen Moore moment is still finger guns against Idaho. If you'll remember the Thursday night game it might have been a Friday night game where he flashes to the sidelines and gives the big old Napoleon Dynamite finger guns. Bang, bang! There's a lot of teeth. I didn't really realize how many teeth the man had until that day.
Kellen Moore is sort of like Napoleon Dynamite in that, like, the more you watch it, like, the first time you see it, you're like, this is pretty quirky. Maybe, you know, it's kind of witty and well done. And, like, each additional viewing, it just gets, like, kind of worse and worse.
Hey, sorry, guys. I'm going to cut this bit, but... Oh, here, do you want your book, buddy? Zeke just walked in and handed me a new book. So that's what you hear. I'm going, book? Book?
That might be my favorite Kellen Moore moment.
Okay, well, let's see. Where do we want to pick back up? Oh, let's pick back up at the different, the casino route. This is the other question that I have, which is, we'll go in 3, 2. So, the other thing to look for in this game, of course, by the way, are announcers for this game. Extremely important part of this.
I believe it's Chris Fowler, Kirk Herbstreit, and America's sweetheart, Tom Rinaldi.
So, yeah, if you are the big dog, if you're high up on the food chain, you get to say, hey, for the bowl game I have to call in December, I get to go to Las Vegas, because that's precisely what Chris Fowler, Kirk Herbstreit, and Tom Rinaldi got to do. I was going to throw this out here. I think Rinaldi's going to do a weepy story about Las Vegas and football. I think it will involve a tubercular blackjack dealer with a heart of gold who formed a special bond with Chris Peterson one night. That's my guess, and that's where our weepy piano music and sweeping shots of the skyline will come in. Luke,
I could see him saying, something to the effect of, a man pulls the lever and with it go a million broken dreams. Divorce papers wait for him back at home. Uh-oh, better get Mako.
Yeah, I think this is actually punishment for Rinaldi, because maybe you can find one story of redemption in Las Vegas, but that person is definitely at the airport leaving.
Yeah.
So, they're probably playing the Wheel of Fortune slot machines on the way out. So,
oh, those are the best.
They are the best.
They're irresistible too, because the logic is irrefutable. I'm getting on a plane, and you have like probably $3 in your pocket, and that $3 is probably going to buy you coffee on the other side. Or you might win it all back if you hit it. You might. And Luke, you've been to Vegas, right?
I have, yeah.
You have. Okay. And how did one fare in Vegas?
It's one of those things where I wound up in old Vegas, so the money lasts, a little bit longer, given that the stakes are a little bit lower. And you still just, you get so up and it feels so good, you're just going to let it ride, and then you're so much poorer than when you started.
And Ryan, you have done Vegas as well, yes?
Yes, I have. And I'm sure you're familiar with the one craps table that is full of happy people, and somebody's dressed like a sea captain and he's pumping his arms a lot.
Yeah.
I am at the craps table next to that, just full of scowling old people who don't want you to even look at the dice.
My favorite place to sit in Las Vegas, if you're going to sit and gamble, is at the roulette table full of Asians. Mm. That's my favorite, because you get some extremely unhappy grimaces from the husbands who are bankrolling these like flossy Shanghai ladies. That's my favorite, because you'll see the woman throw out. I watched a woman throw out $200 a hand, $300 a hand on roulette. And you could tell that, like, this guy had counted on losing, like, about a grand on her. Like, that was his line. Like, you could see it. $800, $900. It got up to about a grand, and suddenly the color started to sort of flush from his cheeks, and he began to kind of pace a little bit back and forth. And she's like, doubling down! Come on, Daddy, keep paying! And Wei Long, wherever he was from, had to keep paying out. And it was a wonderful cross-cultural moment when he looked over at me. And despite the fact of a language gap, I knew that he was in deep emotional pain over how much money he was losing.